And welcome to the Albion Raw here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, on podcast, on Spotify, on just about everywhere. My name's Alan Wares, and we are recording this show totally unscripted, so anything can happen. You believe it or not, AD normally does do the show with an absolute mountain of script, enough to destroy a rainforest. But today we're totally unscripted. It's Good Friday. I'm joined in the studio with Andy Bass. We're going to have a little bit of a post-mortem. The season isn't over, but we're certainly looking to through the yellow pages for undertakers at the moment. Andy, how are you, mate?
I've been better.
Yeah.
I've been better, Al. I've been better.
In life generally or just Albion stuff?
Life generally is actually all right. The Albion stuff is casting a dark shadow.
On a sunny day.
On a sunny day, yeah. Yes, absolutely.
We could actually sort of sit here and actually take every nuance and every bit of pieces of the past sort of week, 10 days apart. And I think that at the end of it, we'd just want to play Leonard Cohen on repeat. But there is more to it than this. And we've got to consider not just sort of like how bad we've been on the pitch and how poorly the players have played, but I think it's the holistic approach to just supporting the Albion and supporting football in the first place. I mean, we are part of a collective, and this collective includes the club themselves, the manager, the players, the fans, and we all have a part to play. So before we start talking about sort of what's happening on the pitch, what do you feel is the right way forward for the fans? Where are we at?
I'll tell you what, I'll start on a positive note. I thought one of the best things about Tuesday night was the performance of the fans. Mm. They really got behind the team. They weren't streaming out with 20 minutes to go. There was still a lot of people there at 80 minutes, and that was on a Tuesday night watching an utterly wretched performance. Mm-hmm. And they were still backing the team. A couple of boos at halftime, which I didn't really agree with.
No.
But there were thoroughly deserved boos at the end. But whilst the game was on, the fans tried their best to lift the team. Mm. And I have to say, hats off to everybody at the Amex on Tuesday night, because unlike the people on the pitch, the fans played their part and really did give it a go, especially after the embarrassment of Saturday and all the outpouring of negative emotion, understandably negative emotions after that game. But people regrouped and they said, "Sod it, we're going to get behind the team and we're going to back them, because what else are we going to do? This is what we're here for. Let's try and get out of this mess."
Well, do you not feel it's therefore churlish just to sort of like criticise every 5 minutes for a pass that? I mean, I'll give you for instance, Tuesday night, 7 minutes in, one of the players misplaces a pass, the booing starts, and you just think, is there any value to that?
I actually didn't hear any.
I mean, it was just the odd isolated person here and there.
Yeah,
and it caused the fella next to me to turn around and shout, a few phrases of Anglo-Saxon back at him. So, just can't you get behind the team? I mean, do you agree with that attitude that, there's no value in just sort of like criticising the team all the time?
I certainly don't. My personal view is to not boo the team during the match. I'm sort of beyond that stage now. But people are going to be frustrated watching stuff go wrong. Mm. And that's not really a premeditated emotion. You see something happen and you just instinctively react. And that could be like, just throwing your hands in the air. It could be a groan. It could be, a shout. It's a highly charged situation at the moment. I don't think you can put a lid on that emotion. I personally don't agree with slagging the players off during the match,
but I think it's fair to be honest your attitude afterwards. I mean, you're quite right. During the game, what's the value in saying what we say and sort of like feeling angry or feeling frustrated or whatever it might be? And you can see it unfolding. And one of the ridiculous things about supporting the Albion is in a game where we're playing really, really well, and we're 3 or 4 now, like we're cruising and we look like we're going to score another one, there's almost a nervous apprehension that, if we concede. Now, the point about that is that the nervous apprehension is always there, and that a slip of the foot or something like that. And yet, perversely, probably the eternal optimist within me, who wants to stick around and see, having seen 85 minutes of turgid nonsense on the pitch, will then see a moment of brilliance and score the goal that we need. And that is the nature of football, that there is always something around the corner.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, it's not over. It's not over till it's over, and you stick with it. I mean,
it's different when you're 5-0 down, obviously. Yeah. But you
stick with it. We've all seen, you know, anybody who was at Millwall will, you know, we've always got that hope that even like in the from you know the 88th minute to the 94th, you could still claw something out. You know, I mean, I've watched the Albion be rubbish many times before.
Absolutely.
Most of my time watching football has been watching not very good football. So, that's part of being a football
Absolutely.
Fan. If you can't hack that, then really find something else to
Absolutely.
Do.
I mean, let's look at where we are now, because let's face it, we've had a very, very poor 2019. And yet in the first half of the season and even the second half of last season, there was, you know, 2018 was actually reasonable in comparison to the club that we're at and the status that we're at within the Premier League. And yet, and I think that my good friend Charlie, who is, I think, sort of hit the nail on the head here, and I'd like to hear your thoughts on it, is that there was almost a turning point when West Ham got their equaliser up at the London Stadium. From there, obviously we haven't looked back, we haven't looked forwards, is, you know, we've just become so susceptible to whatever it is we come to. Because at the first half of the season, we weren't rubbish. When we're talking about the same players, the same team, the same management, criticised for being negative, but we weren't rubbish. So we haven't become a rubbish team overnight. Can you have a go at putting your finger on where it's gone wrong?
Well, funny you should mention that, because I totally agree with Charlie, albeit with the benefit of hindsight. Mm. But you know, when we were 2-0 up, I can't remember how many points we had when we were playing West Ham, but we had a healthy points total at that time, and it looked like we were going to collect another three.
We were 12 clear of the drop zone at the time, something like that.
Yeah, we were going to collect another three and move ever nearer to mid-table, that, you know, the fabled mid-table mediocrity, which we all crave.
And the 40 points.
And then we got blown away in like probably what's about 10 minutes, wasn't it? They just like got two quick goals. And at that time we were a strong defensive unit. Our defence was basically the strength of the team, because we still weren't creating a massive amount up front because of our mobility issues and an injured sort of midfield and whatnot. But then the mask began to slip from our fabled defence. And I think really, if you're going to put this in footballing terms, we are getting caught not being able to rely on our strength. Our strength has now become a weakness.
The defence.
Yeah. I mean, it's not really fair to put the whole thing on the defence, but you know, it is what it is. That's our most secure unit, and at the moment they're being asked to sort of carry the load, and it looks like their back's gone out, and they can no longer do it. And it's really difficult for a team to get any kind of positive results when the good bits are
we're
failing.
Not doing the basics, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the point, is that, you know, we looked a good solid side, and it's how we set our stall out in the first season of the Premier League, and, you know, not to get beaten out of sight. We saw it as a great thing that we only lost 2-0 to Manchester City, or, you know, we didn't look like we were going to do anything, but then you look at other results later in the season with hindsight, and you think, well, actually, we did quite well. And like I say, we were set up to be negative, but to be containing. We do not have, and still do not have, the personnel to be expansive. We just don't have it. So yes, you're quite right. We had to rely on that defence. So, but like you say, because you cannot just blame the defence alone, that means that you're looking at other aspects and features around it. And we've certainly seen a change in layout and style since the beginning of the Premier League last season, since our first game in the Premier League last season, where, you know, previously they played with not fear, but, you know, sort of they were the new boys and they just didn't want to get their pants pulled down. And we've grown into it a little bit. But what we've got since then is having a go, and there's a clear change that we're having more of a go, and yet in going forward, have left ourselves exposed. So it's almost as if you can see that we can either defend or we can attack, but we can't do both.
Yes, that's I've thought that the whole season. And when I, you know, when you read certain critiques of our style of play, I think people forget that, like you say, we just don't have the personnel. You know, my opinion on the quality of this squad is that it is an all right team. It's it's a bottom six team.
It's a championship plus team.
It's
isn't
a bottom. It's a bottom six team that has got little pieces of skill in, but not massive amounts. And it, and more, most importantly, it's a slow team. It is a ponderous team, and that comes from the centre of the pitch. And again, like, you know, these are players that I will have said many complimentary things about in the past, but they are no longer performing their duties well. And that's Xavi Prupa in particular. I mean, just before,
why is everyone on him? Because I mean, people were talking about him in the previous few weeks as being a potential player of the season. So I'm curious
In the early part of the season, I thought he was emerging as a really good quality player. There was just a real touch of elegance and class about some of his play. But he has completely regressed. He's getting beaten in the challenge quite a lot. And he's kind of like joined Dale Stevens in the giving the ball away stakes. And I think with Yves Bissouma, again, it's a raw, exciting talent. But his first touch and his last touch aren't very good. The touches in between are great. But
we don't take the team forward for 30 yards.
But when he reaches the 30th yard, the ball goes no further. It normally ends up at the feet of the opposition.
He chases another metaphor down a blind alley, doesn't he?
Yeah.
No. It's so. Is it a regression or just a lack of progression here? Because, like I say, if we'd have considered it the performances from. Is it also about expectations, the fact that some people do expect us to be that mid-table side now? I mean, is there any sort of reality, any realism attached to, the notion that we should be a mid-table side?
In my opinion, no. I don't think we are a comfortable mid-table side.
Should we be?
No, I don't think the players are good enough. Uh-huh. And also, they're still new to the league. You know, that's not to say that our players are bad, but they are playing badly right now.
And it's collectively they're playing badly.
And it's collectively. It's not. You can't really pick on one person and say, "Oh, that person is rubbish," even though some people have been trying to do that, because the person next to him is rubbish. And it's just spread like a virus through the team. And I think, you know, if the person passing the ball can't rely on the person it's going to A, be there, or if it does reach them, you know,
make sure it's an appropriate pass,
confident they can trap it. I know ball retention's been a bugbear of yours all season, but our ball retention is dismal.
It is dismal.
Our possession right now is very, very slow. It's very predictable. We're an easy team to plan for, to scheme for. And
I just want to cut across you there. You say predictable. It's predictable in as much as we see it week in, week out. Not everyone sees it, so we see it week in, week out. And we know how it is we want to play and who's going to be where and what have you. And I think it's possibly that one of the criticisms is because we know that, you know, player X will be in a given position and they'll know that player Y will be ahead of them, or, you know, there'll be two or three options. And we know it's going to happen, and it's for the opposition to deal with it. And this is where, you know, they'll do their homework on you, but, you know, you still can outfox them and things like that. Now, for instance, I still believe that our approach play is reasonable. We're sluggish, but it's reasonable. But because we're used to seeing, you know, a given play that's going to happen, and we say it's predictable, well, we know it's predictable because we've seen it time and time again, but the other team haven't. But when we saw it for the last two games, especially against Cardiff, you know, I remember a couple of times Bruno had the ball and he's looking around for a pass. He's 10 yards inside the opposition half, looking to ping it forward, and the rest of them are standing around like trees. And his arms are out wide. So when I say it's predictable, what we see is what the players should be doing in a given play. Okay, he's going to pass it into Prepa, who's then going to spin and put it out to March on the wing, and Bruno's going to join him up there. And you realise that these things aren't happening. So even on a given moment, you know, an individual part of the play. But the thing is, it's then the people, too many people for me, will actually then blame the wrong person. And you then get to realise that, okay, well, Bruno is not doing anything with the ball, so people will blame him. Well, there's nothing ahead of him. Mm. Ah, but he's been marked. Well, then you have options. You should always do that. And what we're seeing is not just other teams sussing us out. What we are also seeing is our players not doing the things that we've seen them do before. Yeah. And like I said, this, and I come back to, therefore, we are not rubbish in terms of, you know, our status, our stature. We're not rubbish. But for whatever reason, the players aren't doing what they should be doing or what we've seen them be doing already.
I agree. I mean, you know, I don't think this is a rubbish set of players. I think it's an okay set of players.
It's enough to keep us up, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is a
group of players that have it within them to be able to finish four off the bottom.
Yeah.
You know, I think they're good enough for that.
Mm.
And why do I say that? We've done it already. I've watched them play well.
Yeah.
You know, they're not inherently bad players. But now, if you're playing Brighton Hove Albion, particularly if you're a Cardiff or, you know, or a Bournemouth or like Southampton or Burnley, here's how you beat Brighton Hove Albion. You just put eight men behind the ball.
And wait for us
to make a mistake. Then yeah. You pounce. For the purposes of research, I did have a look at the seven goals we conceded this morning.
Andy, you're still smiling,
and each one was like the result of a breakaway, you know,
a breakdown in passing,
you know, sort of conceding possession cheaply, and like conceding possession cheaply, like in the opposition half,
mm.
So like quite a long way away from the goal, But the other team can then break 70 yards in like about 3 or 4 seconds. Mm. And it's in the back of the net. And we
70 yards in 4 seconds? Wow.
I mean, it'd be kicking the ball.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. But, yeah, but you know, but like, you know, 10, 20 seconds later, it's in the back of the net.
Yeah.
And we just get caught out. Every time we make an error, it's costly. Every time one of our opponents makes an error, we don't punish them.
Therein lies the point, is that because we're not set up defensively, we can't defend against that. We are suspect to the breakaway, which, let's face it, from memory, certainly four or five of Bournemouth's five goals were like that. And I seem to recall that Cardiff's was, their first one was. And even then, the fact that I'm not convinced that the free kick for their second goal should have been a free kick.
No,
but that's by the point. You know, we're just so poorly defended. So if we're of the opinion, I think we can actually harden it to a fact that we do have players that are good enough. But the criticism still comes back: our players aren't good enough, and so some people who do need a scapegoat, they do need a finger, you know, a target to point the finger at. They're saying is that the recruitment isn't good enough. Now, it could be that the recruitment isn't good enough, but I think it's all dependent on the state that we're at, the status we're in. And this is my point about it. For me, it's all about resources. And this is the conversation we had, probably slightly drunkenly on the train back on Tuesday night, is that if you consider the past 10 years, who are the clubs that have been in the Premier League over those past 10 years the least? And I think we worked out it was probably Cardiff to a point, but certainly us and Huddersfield. Wolves have been in the Premier League. They had no business being in League One, you know, a few years ago. You know, for all Jackie Oakley saying, oh, 3 years ago, 6 years ago, we were playing Stevenage, and now look at us. Well, you shouldn't have been playing Stevenage in the first place. So that's a separate point. But the point is that when we came up from the Championship, and bearing in mind that we hadn't been in the top division for 30-odd years, Huddersfield hadn't been for 40-odd years, what we were adding to was a Championship squad. And likewise with Huddersfield, we were adding to a Championship squad. But when you're in the Premier League for years and years and years and years, what you're adding to is ultimately a Premier League squad. So you're strengthening a Premier League squad. So the point is that, and there's still a lot of players who were Championship players who are now Premier League players. I don't want to say they're not making the leap up. They are. I mean, they've proved that they are Premier League enough quality. But if you're going to compare what we can attract compared to what others can attract, we are always going to get the crumbs in the Premier League. always, for these first two or three years, that's what's going to happen.
I mean, you know, when the Premier League teams are queuing up to you know, make their transfer purchases, you know, we are going to be at the back of the queue.
Mm. We jump the queue and go to places like Holland and Belgium to pick our players.
Yeah.
Is that the right way to do it, though?
I would have to say, on this evidence, basing your entire strategy around that, I think, is a mistake. The problem we've had with the players that have come in, and I'm talking about Yves Bissouma, Florian Andone, Ali Reza Yahanbakhsh, and these are all players that are coming in for criticism at the moment. Jurgen Nkardia. Now, all of these players, Bissouma aside, they came from leagues which had different styles of play, where you have way more time on the ball, and getting used to the English Premier League is an adjustment for these players. It doesn't mean they're bad players, but they kind of need to be carried by the rest of the team, at least for a few months, just because that is the nature of the game. And the problem is that these are the only players that we're bringing in, and they all need that period of adjustment. And they were all. And the other problem we had with these players is that they were injured when they came here, so they weren't ready. They weren't ready to start, so they weren't even ready to sort of like join the squad and get involved and link up with the players because of an injury, and then you have to like play yourself into the team and then play yourself into the league. And then with Yahanbakhsh, you know, again, he's been injured. He hasn't really had a brilliant run in the side. He was then away for a month at the Asian Cup. So it's just, he's not had a chance to get in. I know that he's a popular person for catcalls at the moment, but I think he's potentially a decent player, but he isn't really adding anything to the side at the moment.
No. I think what we've got this year is actually, I think we've got a better squad rather than a better first team. And I think that, you know, assuming that we can stay in this league, that I think that the priority needs to be actually sort of like looking at the better players. Because let's face it, our second 11 was clearly better than Bournemouth's second 11 earlier in the season in the FA Cup. Our second 11 virtually got us to Wembley.
Yeah.
So our squad is decent. And if we do get relegated, we've got a squad of players that, you know, really ought to sort of do well in the Championship. But I think what we are lacking is that our first 11 is still, you know, that those squad players have not pushed those. You know, they've got rid of the deadwood from the squad that was there previously, but they're not pushing the first 11. And I think that's probably got to be seen as the priority, not just filling in the numbers. Yeah. But I think for me, that's a kind of an incremental part of things. I mean, we were discussing it. Do we need sort of, you know, a sort of big English sort of lumbering number nine or an enforcer in the midfield who's ultimately highly skillful from the English league? You know, bearing in mind that obviously when you buy from the English leagues, you have to basically double your transfer fee.
I think. The nationality doesn't really bother me. It doesn't have to be an English player. What it needs to be is a player that is already attuned to playing English football. So it could be someone. It could be a player from the Championship. It could be a player who's currently with a Premier League team, but someone who's got experience. Someone for whom it's not.
I prefer someone who's been in the Premier League before. The Championship, I prefer them to have Premier League experience because, as you said yourself, to adjust to the Premier League, even from a Championship player's point of view, that's a massive leap, isn't it?
But you look at Burnley, for instance, which has basically got a third of that team is ex-Championship Brighton players.
Yeah.
And they're not a great team, but they know what it's about. It's not a shock to them. They're not frightened of it. They're not. You know, they don't have to get used to it. They're just into it. They're oven-ready players.
Mm.
And I have no problems with the team going out and looking to try, you know, looking at the Andones, looking at the Yahanbakhshs, and you know, going out to those leagues, that's fine. But you need to complement those. If you're going to have those signings, you need to complement them with guys you know that can just go in straight away. And as you say, push the first 11. Mm. So someone who is going to challenge for a starting place from day one, and someone, please, no more injured players. If we can't, you know, the way our squad is built, we can't wait 3 months for somebody to get into the side. We need them in straight away. I mean, I just think you know, that's what we need to do.
Okay, listen, you're listening to Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. This is the Albion Raw. My name's Alan Wares. I've got Andy Bass in the studio with me. We're having a bit of a post-mortem from a very poor week for the Albion on the pitch. You know, as us being sort of old and knackered and smelly, we still have optimism. We'll talk about that in a minute. But as you know, this programme is brought to you in association with oldfootballshirts.com. Phil Shelley last week, live on air, did put up the 100,000th shirt on the website. So well done. Brilliant effort for a couple of anoraks, but superb. And if you want to go and see what that 100,000th shirt is, it's something from the Spanish 4th Division. Looks a little bit, I think we discussed it, it looks a bit like Adrianians. It's kind of like a cricket shirt of white with a V
shirt
on it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's a little doozy. But Phil's given us another shirt of the week to talk about. So Andy, I've sent this picture to you, and if you could describe this shirt, good luck.
Well, this shirt is basically the football shirt equivalent of the last two Albion performances. It's an utter horror show.
Right.
It's absolutely...
all over the place.
It is absolutely vile.
Have a go at describing it.
Okay, so basically what we have a creeping geometric... cubist-style patchwork of red, white and blue...
TV interference.
Just sort of, like, creeping over... sort of, like, growing over the rest of the shirt, which is, like, a blue with white pinstripe. It kind of looks like a weird sort of 3D load of steps, or was you just... It's like a magic... It's like a magic... picture thing.
One of these Trump Loy things.
Yeah, I mean, as if I wasn't feeling bad enough already today, just looking at this thing makes me feel ill.
It's
really disgusting.
It is not good, actually. I mean, and to be fair to you, well done for giving it a go. I'm impressed. This is Phil's football shirt of the week. Chosen really in acknowledgement of their performance of the week. This is an Ajax shirt, their away shirt from the 89-90 season.
Wow, Ajax wore that.
Yeah, I know. known rather graciously by themselves as the Goedenzonen, the Sons of God, they're one of Holland's oldest clubs and they play at the 54,990 capacity Johan Cruyff Arena in the capital Amsterdam. The stadium boasts a retractable roof and after terrible problems with the grass, growth due to the lack of sunlight, the stadium is credited with having been the birthplace of the artificial UV lighting rigs now seen helping grass grow at stadiums all over the world. The International Federation of Football History and Statistics, there just had to be one, there's probably only one, place Ajax as the world's seventh most successful club of the 20th century and Europe's second most successful. They are one of only five teams to have earned the right to keep the European Cup, having won the Cup for three consecutive seasons. Go on, Andy, have a guess which seasons.
74, 75 and 76?
Not bad, 71, 72 and 73. Ajax hold seemingly dozens of records. Here's a couple. In 2013-14, their Adidas away shirt was apparently voted Football Shirt of the Year. News to him, but I have to, as he has to say, it's not a bad effort. I wonder where you could look to see an example. Any ideas where you might see this shirt, Andy? No. And they won every single home league game in seasons 71-72 and 72-73. That's 46 consecutive home league victories. Quite impressive. You can see that shirt and over 100,000 like it at oldfootballshirts.com. Thanks very much indeed for that, Phil. And well done, Andy, for having a go to describe that. I think you probably describe Keith Moon's drubbing better that way. Right, we've identified, Andy, that obviously things aren't going well and we are staring at the trapdoor. We're still not actually standing on it, unbelievably. It hasn't fallen through it. We've got not much time to go in terms of this season to remedy it, but how can we do this? And more to the point, can we do this?
I have to say, on Tuesday, as I walked back to the concourse, my immediate reaction was, that's it, we're done. We've been consistently bad over that period of games, Burnley, Southampton, Bournemouth and Cardiff, to fail to get a single point from all four of those games. I thought Burnley were slightly unfortunate in terms of like the refereeing decisions and whatnot. But the other three games, we were poor. The team did not appear to be motivated or prepared well. That may be an unfair criticism on my part, but you know, I can only go by what I see on the pitch.
We are back to, but we're back to why has it gone wrong?
Yeah, and it's really difficult to put a finger on it without sort of being in the room and like really knowing what the relationship between the players are, what the manager and the coaches are actually doing, because whatever is being done, it is not working. And I'm a huge Chris Hughton fan, but you know, I really hope his legacy isn't tarnished by what happens at the end of this season. But whatever it is that is going on there, it isn't working. Mm. And really, they just have to sort it out. They, you know, they have to remember what they did before when they were much better. Mm. They've got it in them. We've seen it.
Mm.
They know it. But there just seems to be a lack of heart.
Do you subscribe to the theory of and you touched on it earlier? Do you subscribe to the theory of blaming one person for this?
No, absolutely not. It's a collective.
So the whole notion of actually offloading Chris Hughton is at the moment absolutely pointless.
I would be reluctant. No, I mean, I don't think that would do anything for us. I think it's too late. I mean, really, how do we get out of it? You know, the answer isn't going to be popular, but really, be boring as hell and make sure we don't give away easy goals. Mm. We have to get back to being defensive, keeping ourselves in the games, because if we could try an attack in any of these matches, we're going to lose.
Mm.
That's just going to happen. But can we get a 0-0? Can we nick a 1-0 win? Yeah, if we get back to doing what we the basics and doing what we do best, then yes, we can do that.
Mm.
And that is going to be ugly. It's going to be flipping tedious to watch, but that will give us the best chance. I mean, the game against Wolves, prime example. You know, they've got so much talent going forward that if we give them easy possession, and it's not just about them having lots of possession. When I say easy possession, I mean somebody giving the ball away when people are out of position. Mm. So it's like, you know, you try this pass, but it gets easily intercepted, and then suddenly you're 5 yards behind the guy running. So all you're going to do is catch up with him and either foul him, or you're not going to catch up with him and he's going to put someone else in.
Mm.
And they've got the pace to do that.
Mm.
We keep putting ourselves in those positions
mm.
where the ball carrier is just not being challenged. We have to be more disciplined. I thought ironically against Manchester City at Wembley, we did that.
And got criticised for not going forward enough.
We did it exceptionally well.
Mm.
We were disciplined. We showed good character. Character that has not been on display in the recent league fixtures, but it was there in spades at Wembley, where we were disciplined. We responded well to conceding the early goal. We didn't crumble. Mm-hmm. We actually had that spirit. And we pushed them. We closed down the spaces. We didn't give them easy, but mm. we made them work for it. But we didn't make Cardiff work for it.
Nope.
We didn't make Bournemouth work for it. No. We didn't make Southampton or Burnley work for it either. So, I mean, the players just have to answer questions. It's like, come on, just mm. get on and do it. I don't really want to.
Blaming one person. No. I think there's a collective criticism.
It's a collective
collapse. So therefore, probably in both games, they'd have probably booed themselves off if they were watching.
Yes,
they know how poor
yeah.
they were.
Yeah.
Shane Duffy put out an excellent tweet. You know, he says, you know, we accept the criticism, and when it's valid, he'll take it, and he's taken it today. They know they've been poor, but being poor is one thing. Being poor is forgivable. Not doing anything about it isn't.
Yeah, I agree. And I'd say, I mean, Duffy's not been covering himself in glory, but he has got the passion there. You can see he's all over. He's shouting at the players.
He is so frustrated. I mean, when he's been put up at the top of the pitch for the last 10 minutes, you can see actually one of the highlights of what's going wrong is that the ball isn't coming in. He's saying, you know, out go the arms again. Come on, where's the ball? You know.
So here's the other thing that should have been the writing on the wall is like back in the day when. You know, when the sun was shining a little bit more in our hearts than it is today, we were having games against goalkeepers that were having their game of the season, having like putting three or four worldies out, and we either lost the game or we drew a game that we should have won.
Yeah.
And so, can we create chances? Yes, we can. We did it in all of these other games
to where be fair, we did against Cardiff for the most part.
And we didn't really make Etheridge do a great deal in that game, but now we're not creating, and it doesn't matter who's up front. If it's Andoni, we're not creating chances for him. If it's Murray, we're not creating chances for him. So you want to swap the? I actually am of the opinion that it doesn't really matter who what the personnel is, whether you play March or your Hambach
or even Gioppa or anything. If the passing and the movement isn't there, regardless
of who it is, then it really doesn't matter what the team is. I feel frustrated for Murray and Andoni up front because they've got nothing to work with.
But I also do feel that the one up front notion is a red herring for all the people saying I'll put two up front. Well, we played two up front against Cardiff for a lot of the game.
Yeah.
It didn't sort of really work. And as you say, the movement, the system, everything like that, you know, and we're back to sort of the Ricky Tomlinson character, the England manager,
Mike Bassett,
England manager, and his 4-4-2 and all this sort of nonsense. You know, the point is that the one up front got us promoted to the Championship and he kept us in the Premier League. Yeah, you know, they want to have. We are back to. Remember when Gus Poyet took over and people started screaming, get it forward. And the whole notion of possession football was alien to people. No, just lump it forward and charge. And there's still some people have that kind of Hackney Marshes mindset. We've got to have two up front. Well, not necessarily. You know, that's not to say you shouldn't. But to scream that two up front is always the answer isn't necessarily the case. Like I say, we've done very well on the back of just having one. It's about who else is there as well. And like I say, we had nominally Andoni and Murray on the pitch for most of the, you know, a lot of the Cardiff game. And it achieved the square root of rock all. So that, as you say, it's not necessarily the system per se, because the system itself has got, you know, done us quite well. It's the application of it.
Yeah, the application and execution of footballing basics has been very poor. The passing...
And that's for the professionals to take responsibility for themselves.
The passing and ball control, just like trapping the ball, it's been abysmal. The shooting and the rare occasions that we've managed to have a shot has not been up to snuff either. And the positioning of the defenders has been poor. But then I think you've got out of position midfielders, and they kind of dragging themselves out all over. Like it's like a domino effect of players just kind of undermining their fellow teammates by, and I think that's where the frustration comes. And Prepper and Stevens again. I was just saying, like, you know, the defence has been our rock, has let us down. Prepper and Stevens have been our central midfield rock. And they're failing miserably now. They're almost
probably unfamiliar with.
They've collapsed. Mm. So I think once the season is done, whichever division we're in, I think there has to, when it comes to recruitment, I think you need to get people in that can play straight away, that are fit, don't have an injury history, and know how to play in English football. And also, you know, if they're an attacking midfielder, play them as an attacking midfielder, not a defensive one. Yeah. If they're a winger, play them out wide, not in the number 10 role. You know, don't stop putting square pegs in round holes. I think
to be fair, I think that probably the majority of players do play in the most familiar positions. I know that Proper plays in more of a withdrawal role than he does for the Netherlands, but for the most part, I think they're all sort of large. Lacardia could be up front a bit more, but, you know.
Yeah, see, I kind of like Lacardia on the wing. I think he's one player that does kind of link the rest of the team to the forward players.
I still prefer Ashley Barnes there, frankly.
Yeah, but Yeah, me too. I mean, yeah. But look at Ashley. He's had a great Premier League. He's had a great Premier League
career. And look at all the slings and arrows of outrageous, you know, missed shooting that he's had come his way, and yet he's carved out a decent Premier League career. That's not to say I still believe that, even though he was a bit of a sort of like a wobblehead, he was one of those signings we should not have offloaded. You knew he had a lot to contribute. And our loss is Burnley's gain, and you know, fair play to them, and he's done well. I mean, don't get me wrong, he still talks out of his backside on Match of the Day, but you know, twas ever thus. He is a nasty, spiteful player in the nicest sense. Not you can have a nice nastiness. Who's done very well, but you know,
he's nasty if you're the opponent, but he's great if he's great if he's in your team. I think the one throw of the dice, however effective or ineffective it might be, would be to get Kyle back in the team. I think he offers drive in that middle area. I think you'd start Gross. I thought Gross did make a difference.
He had a go, but you could see he certainly wasn't fit.
He's not fit, so I think you get your good half an hour out of Gross, and then you replace him with Kyle. I think Basuma's done for the year, but.
But that's, again, we're doing the one thing we said we weren't going to do when this is micromanaging the, sort of like every individual thing. Like I say, it's a collective.
It's a collective thing. I mean, basically, they just you know, chuck a bucket of water over their heads and just sober up and remember what it is that
got us here in the first place.
And you know, as down as I've felt all week about the Albion, and it's just, I mean, Tuesday was just desperate. I mean, you know, like. Yeah. After Bournemouth on Saturday, we almost laughed it off because it was
so ridiculous.
It was so crazy. But Tuesday, it was an altogether darker feeling. You really felt like you'd had the stuffing knocked out of you.
Yeah.
But again,
we weren't angry. I mean, it was almost like we come to terms with it almost.
But
you think, can we just end the season now? And
but here's
and, you
the
know.
Thing. Five games left.
Yep.
Five games. They have not been played yet. We haven't lost them all. Yeah. Go out.
Don't, do your basics.
Don't lose it before you get out there. Go out there. Every game. Draw those five games. And that'll probably do it. But you know, Wolves on Saturday, you know, I'm not optimistic, but we give it a chance. Spurs might be distracted by the Champions League on Tuesday. Arsenal always play crap against crap teams, so yeah. We certainly fit that description.
Yeah.
And what could be more Man City than them blowing the title at relegation
fodder.
Yep. At the Amex on the last day of the season? So you know, we'll never have to buy a drink in Liverpool again.
Brilliant. And with that. And with that, these last 3 minutes have been brought to you in association with Liquid Optimism. You've been listening to this podcast special of the Albion Raw. Sorry to sound a little bit down, but, you know, it's understandable, even though the sun's shining. So thanks for listening. Thanks to Andy Bass for coming in and taking part of his Easter holiday to have a good grumble, but, you know, end it on a positive note. I'm Alan Wares, and we'll see you for a regular show very soon. Cheers. Don't let me down.
done me. She done me good. I guess nobody ever really done me. Ooh, she done me.